Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
I'm Madeline Taylor. You're listening to a documentary produced for CJSF 90.1 FM's Making Time for Radio project. This is I Am a Fruit Tree.
This is my island in the sun, where my people have toiled since time begun. I may sail on many a sea, her shores will always be home to me.
Simon Fraser University has a bit of a reputation. It's known to be dark, the architecture is often compared to a prison, and everyone complains about the commute. Because we all commute, it's hard to make friends on the mountain. As a student, it's easy to let this stereotype dictate your experience. We fall into the tyranny of the urgent. It's tempting to plug in, power through, and ignore the world around you. Thankfully, there are characters at SFU who break this mold every day.
I'm Shiraz Ramji. I was born in Tanzania, East Africa, on 10th December 1948. At present, I'm 66 years old. That is about 24,000 days, because I love to count my age in days, and I can celebrate my birthday every day. I'm an educator. I'm trained as a teacher and also as a gerontologist, and I call myself a justice-friendly pacifist.
Shiraz is very well known at SFU for a few different reasons. He has lectured, worked, and studied all over campus since 1994. I first met Shiraz when I was a student. He was standing in a main concourse with a smile, giving out copies of his poetry. He wears sports clothes emblazoned with SFU logos and walks like he's late for something. What is striking about him is his lack of pretense. He doesn't expect anything from you when he offers his poetry. It's simply an open invitation to engage. I found this so unusual and couldn't quite figure out what his motivation was. As it turns out, Shiraz is a peace activist. He told me he's been writing poetry since he was a young boy. He calls it part of his activism and uses poetry to start conversations and spread his message of justice-friendly peace.
It was mostly grade 5 or 6 somewhere where the teacher said, "You speak like a poet." I didn't know what he meant, but he says, write whatever you're speaking. And he would read it and he said, "This is poetry and you should write it all the time." One day I realized the price of photocopier at my student union was 4 cents. So I said, "Oh, I can afford that." So I said, "Okay, I'll spend $2 every day for my poetry." So I started printing them. And then I started sharing them. That was about 12 years ago.
Shiraz doesn't only do this at SFU. He approaches people in every part of his daily life.
That's always a challenge, whom I should ask. Sometimes it can be like this morning. There was a woman on the SkyTrain. She was reading about elementary educators. So I said, "Oh, I am an educator." So I asked her, "Do you read poetry and where do you study?" And I said, "I write poetry." So I gave her one. So it depends. If I know, like SFU students, is very easy. So I just tell them, "I write poetry. Do you read poetry?" And then they say yes. So I said, "Take one." And if they don't want it, then I say, "Thank you, okay, next." But even if I didn't have poetry, I would just talk to people. So that has always been my lifestyle.
Back at SFU, Shiraz took me around to some of his favorite parts of campus. On this little walking tour, I discovered that homemade hummus is another tool he uses to connect.
Hi, here she is. Hi, Sarah. How are you?
Hello, Shiraz.
How are you?
I'm doing very well.
Yeah.
Nice to see you.
Nice. I'm thinking of your ice cream all the time.
Oh, I love it.
So my name is Sarah Manassian, and I'm the fitness programmer at SFU Recreation. When I think of Shiraz, I just think of this warm, smiling guy. He would come into the fitness center, and he'd always bring us pita and homemade hummus. And it was staffs, like, would get excited about, like, oh, it's Sunday, Shiraz is coming in, he's going to bring his, like, pita and homemade hummus, and we just loved that. That's probably one of my fondest memories, because it happened every weekend, like, without stop. And I think that kind of made our fitness center more of a community, too, because people would actually come in on the weekends to, because they knew Shiraz was going to come, to bring pita and hummus, and they'd come in on the weekends, so we'd all sit around and eat the hummus that Shiraz would bring.
He got this reaction constantly. What I wanted to know was what in his life led Shiraz to be so open with his community. After getting to know him better, I started to understand the root of his activism.
Well, you see, when I grew up in Tanzania, I was born in 1948, so I started schooling in 54. And so it was still part of British colony, and so you see all the racism and segregation of all the different racial groups and so on. So you knew what was colonialism, what is dictatorship, and you hear about all the wars and stuff like that. There were schools which were for European settlers, and then there were Asian schools, and there were African schools. Yeah, like even the buses, they had segregated place. You had to, like, you got the movies, you had to stand up because you had to sing the God Save the King and stuff like that. So we all knew that, and the whole glorification of Britain, how good it is. And it was legally that way, but it, so some people assimilated with the whole thing and accepted their second-class status. I wasn't very keen on that. So it was there all the time.
Tanzania achieved independence from British colonial rule in 1961. To the south, Mozambique was under Portuguese colonial rule. They endured a decade of anti-colonial struggle, followed by a civil war through the 1970s and 80s. In the 1970s, Shiraz taught in Tanzania. There, he supported the African Liberation Movement and its activists.
It was part of the anti-colonial struggle in Tanzania itself. We were quite influenced by Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and Angela Davis. So it was at the global level as well as local level, there was the whole issue of anti-apartheid.
These experiences of colonial violence, segregation, and oppression have made Shiraz very aware of the dangers of focusing on difference.
I mean, I met a lot of the present and the past leaders of South Africa or Mozambique and so on. So they would come to our school and give a talk. So it has been very much part of my struggle, yeah.
By the early 1990s, after decades of working in education, in medical research, in public health, and in refugee advocacy in East Africa, Shiraz was looking for a change. Both of his parents had passed away, and his partner was killed in a bicycle accident while studying in London.
Well, I was in Africa at that time, and she was finishing her master's in nutrition. And that's when it happened. So we were studying together at London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. So I got the news from family and so on of that happened, because she was going to join me. So that was quite tragic. But then I didn't know what to tell people because I moved from Tanzania to Zimbabwe. So they didn't know her, right? So it was very hard to tell people. So that was on time when I was on my own. At that level, I'm more of a private person. Like, I wouldn't talk much about these things, generally, unless people ask me. So when it came to 94, my mission was at least to be involved with anti-apartheid struggle in South Africa, and then independence came in April 94. Mother had passed, my father had also passed in Africa. After the anti-apartheid struggle in South Africa was become more independent struggles, right, I wanted a break. And my sister was very ill, so I came to Canada.
Shiraz's transition to Canada was eased by his entry into community life at SFU. A student and an educator for his whole life, he was comfortable at school.
So here is our library. So this is what I call the holy place, the holy land. SFU Holy Land. It's for everybody.
Shiraz talks a lot about globalizing friendship and how this can be done through sharing food with your community. Food was a central theme in all of the conversations I had with Shiraz. This is Celeste. She taught Shiraz when he took a movement class at SFU.
There was an unforgettable story. Every student in the class is required to teach the rest of the class a dance. It could be a circle dance, a folk dance, but they have to make it up from scratch. Shiraz taught us a dance called the hummus dance. It was like a group dance around food globalization, and we danced the hummus, we made the hummus through dance. The joy that he brought to this piece and the love that he brought to this piece was so truly moving.
Shiraz doesn't believe in the idea of strangers. He thinks it allows for fear and separation.
Because I don't have many family members, so I just interact with people as if they are part of the family. Mm-hmm. So when I'm going in the morning exercise, I'm feeling I'm with the community. And so it's a way to break the barrier of being lonely or isolated.
To be honest, I don't know what the words are for it. I feel a feeling when I think of Shiraz. I think maybe the thing that's different about him is he'll engage anybody and everybody. He's just so welcoming. He's so open. He'll come up, he'll give you a hug, he'll speak smiles. Have you read my poetry lately? Here's what's going on. Do you want some hummus? I'm going to bring you some food. Like, it's every time that you see him.
As I said, I always want to know, first to create that community and make people not be afraid of me or anybody else. But also to hear stories of people in terms of not necessarily private stories, but how do they look at life and how do they respond to people like me. So it gives me a feeling that there are many people who want to create that community, but somebody has to start. Almost every case, I'm the one who starts, and then the ball starts rolling.
I love the sense of his deep curiosity for life. To me, that's what SFU was all about. Now I look around at SFU and I see them all. They look absolutely, everyone looks bored to death. You get Shiraz walking through here. He has a love of life. And you know, it doesn't even need a cell phone.
So it turns out that Shiraz isn't well known at SFU because of his longevity. It's because he reminds people of what they really want from campus. Community and a sense of belonging.
SFU is a happy place, and it's also a place with some challenges. Happiness in a sense, there's a diversity of people. It can be sadness because the education system, so a lot of education is very Eurocentric. And there are a lot of slogans like critical learning or critical thinking, but essentially it's more conformist education. So it can be challenging for you. I normally consider every person is a fruit tree, so I said just enjoy the fruit.
Why a fruit tree?
Well, I was surrounded. I grew up with so many fruit trees. Papayas grow in 9 months. I used to plant a lot of fruit trees. And I think it's a universal food. There's no recipe for fruit trees. It's just fruit. So I thought as a global citizen, it fits in my narrative.
What does community mean to you?
Community is like what I call the fruit salad, right? Where you have a mixture of everybody around. So it's much of a collective experience. I mean, there are a collective experience in SFU, for example. It's a community, right?
His outlook is contagious. But here's the thing. What is a community? A community is a group of people with something in common, but it's often described as a sense. You feel a sense of community. It's not something that geographic locations just have on their own. Shiraz's approach is to make every space into a community.
I believe we all have the capacity to touch into something that is invisible, that is greater than us, on however you articulate it. But it is a love that infuses far beyond the imagination and far beyond our daily living, because our daily living is fraught with so many difficulties. And I think Shiraz has probably had experiences enough to have to empty himself, where he then is tapped into this greater source of love. And I'm not going to articulate certain labels around that, but I believe he embodies love.
I tell people, I believe that I'm not the only Shiraz in the world. There are many people Shiraz in the world. And for example, I can relate to you because I see Shiraz in you and you see yourself in me, right? So don't assume you're alone.
His poetry is not only in print, it's the impression he leaves on people. His embodiment of the fruit tree allows him to connect and create openness and curiosity in the people he meets. He makes eye contact, simple conversation, and impacts SFU by building community through the simple act of constant and unapologetic engagement.
That's what I tell people. Take your part. If you need help, come and have a tea with me.
Well, on that note, can you share a poem or two with us?
Yeah, okay, I'll share with you the one, my favorite one, which is my autobiography of as a child. It's called We Are Mother Earth. I am a fruit tree. I am a fruitful tree. I am a banana tree. I grow bananas shaped like human lips to share and tell stories with my global friends. I am a cherry tree. I grow cherries shaped like human eyes.
This documentary was produced with the support and assistance of CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia, and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. I would also like to thank Shiraz Ramji, Celeste Snober, Sarah Manassian, and Victoria Haraway for their voices and stories.
Her shores will always be home to me. Oh, island.
This is Bird Note. Throughout much of North America, the great blue heron graces waterways, ponds, and lakes. Standing silent as frogs call out, they peer into the water looking for fish and amphibians before striking out with their long bill. So it might be a surprise to find a great blue heron stalking across a field, not a drop of water in sight. Is this heron just confused? Or ill? Well, sometimes herons will leave the waterside in pursuit of prey on land, such as big insects, frogs, even small rodents. These birds are crafty predators, and their skills can also work well in grasslands and crop fields. So, no cause for alarm if you see a heron in a yard or park away from the water. The bird will probably fly off once catching plenty of prey. Just when you think you know everything about a bird, they'll find a way to surprise you. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Support for Bird Note is provided by Ellen Blackstone from Edmonds, Washington, and generous listeners around the world.
Join us Friday, July 28th at 9 p.m. for a special performance by Jane Harms and Ian Davies to celebrate the release of Unit Pitt's limited edition Sound of the Sun Volume 1 cassette tape, available for purchase that evening. Jane Harms' new work, The Weekend of the Year, is featured on the compilation, which she will perform alongside several other works. Accompanying the celebration is the king of bedroom country, Ian Davies, who graciously brings his tunes for us from Montreal. Thank you to the Pale Fire for their support in hosting this event, which will additionally be an opportunity to see their current exhibit, Primes, showing works by Nicole Andre. Tickets are limited. Reserve your spot now. Pale Fire is located at 866 East Broadway, Vancouver.
We're on a beach, oh yeah, we're on a beach. We're drinking income taxes in the sand at our feet. We're on a beach, oh yeah, we're on a beach. We're drinking income taxes and you're fond of me. Just breathe out and in. Keep your eyes on this ring as I swing it back and forth on this here string. Eyelids are heavy wings. All the things This ain't meant to be. Hey, listen to our we driver operate heavy machinery. This ain't meant to be. Hey, listen to our we driver operate heavy machinery. Oh yeah, we're on a beach. Oh yeah, we're on a beach. We're drinking income taxes and we're out of reach. We're on a beach. Oh yeah, we're on a beach. We're drinking income taxes and we're out.
Polygon Gallery is pleased to present Deckshare Cinema, an outdoor summer film series taking place on Kate's Deck, located on the waterfront directly in front of the gallery. Hosted for 10 Thursdays beginning June 29th, the screenings commence at sunset and will be complemented by music and entertainment leading up to curtain time. Admission to Deckshare Cinema is by donation and includes access to the gallery's summer exhibition, Jeremy Shaw, Phase Shifting Index. To learn more about this event, visit thepolygon.ca.
Western Front is pleased to present Tremor, a new performance by Samita Sinha. Tremor is the emergence of voice through wreckage and the celebration of the body as a gateway to the cosmos. Sinha works with fragments from Indian vocal traditions as vessels to harness and liberate energy through the body and sound. In Tremor, she voices a relationship to a live and immersive sonic environment. Join Samita at Western Front, 303 8th Avenue, in Vancouver on July 21st to 22nd, with performances at 8:45 p.m, doors at 8:30. Admission is by donation, with suggested amounts $15 to $35. More information can be found at westernfront.ca.
Thank you. happens when an outdoor enthusiast and evolutionary ecologist experiences Lyme and other tick-borne illnesses firsthand? Well, naturally, she dives into the peer-reviewed research and writes a book about it. And then she joins the board of the Canadian Lyme Disease Foundation. Dr. Shelley Ball is an evolutionary ecologist, a fellow of the Royal Canadian Geographical Society, and she participated in the inaugural Homeward Bound Women in Science expedition to Antarctica in 2016. We reached her in Westport, Ontario. Welcome to our Looking at Lyme podcast, Dr. Ball.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks so much for having me. I really, really appreciate the opportunity to chat with you.
How did you become involved with Lyme disease?
Unfortunately, I became involved with Lyme disease as a person suffering from Lyme and other tick-borne illnesses. It wasn't a choice, but it found me. And, you know, so I'm a former research scientist and a university professor and you know, kind of a knowledge sponge. And I think my way of dealing with problems is just to gain as much knowledge on a topic as possible. And as I have learned the unfortunate and very hard way with Lyme is that you need to self-educate and do your research because we don't get the help from our, you know, public healthcare system that we need. So you very much have to self-educate and become a very vocal advocate for your care.
Yeah, I have a copy of your book. The publisher sent me a copy from Firefly Books, and the title of the book is Lyme Disease, Ticks, and You. And I must say, I was quite amazed that you pulled this book together in the amount of time you did, because I've been sick a lot longer than you, and I could have never pulled anything like this off.
I think it's pure determination, right?
Well, I think it's really valuable, though, to have the scientific perspective and a Canadian scientific perspective. So why did you decide to put your time into writing this book?
A really good question. And you know, I think it really comes down to I just desperately want to help people because I'll be honest, I have been to hell and back with Lyme disease and two other tick-borne illnesses, as well as mold infections, and I continue to. I mean, we know that treating Lyme, especially those of us in chronic Lyme, is a very, very, very long marathon, not a sprint. You know, as a research scientist, you know, as I said, I'm just a knowledge sponge, and I want to know. I want to solve problems, right? And so because of my science background, you know, I'm not a Lyme researcher, you know, I am an evolutionary ecologist and population geneticist, but, you know, as a scientist, I have the ability to read the peer-reviewed science papers that are out there and to read them from a very critical eye. And so, you know, it was just natural for me to delve into the scientific literature and learn as much as I possibly could. And unfortunately, you know, I found that I had to literally turn to the current scientific literature in order to get treatment. I have a wonderful GP. I really respect her. She's excellent. But I really had to fight for a Lyme diagnosis. Because as we sadly, you know, many of us with Lyme know that you get negative Lyme tests and then your doctor says, well, I don't have Lyme. And, you know, I think on my third appointment, I walked into her office with about a 12-inch stack of printouts of peer-reviewed science articles and said, here's why I can have Lyme disease, but the test is negative. And she was great. We sat down and we had a, you know, heart-to-heart conversation. And she said, well, you know, let me test you for other things to rule them out. But I said, fine, but just give me some doxycycline. And she gave me as much as she possibly could as a GP.
Yeah, I mean, that's such an interesting observation. I mean, this dialogue between science and medicine is ongoing, and sometimes people are speaking different languages.
Absolutely. I think that's actually a really great way to put it. And you know, kind of coming back to why I wrote the book, that's basically why I wrote it, was because, you know, there are some fabulous books about Lyme disease out there. And you know, I've been gobbling those up and reading them and rereading them and rereading them, right? Because you know, they're big books and you get something different out of them each time. But as a science communicator, something that I'm really big on is how do we take science, especially complex science, because Lyme is complex, right? And you know, science is still learning new things about it. So how do we take that and how do we boil it down into a way that the general public can understand it and consume it. And as I say, you know, there are lots of really fantastic books about Lyme out there, but some of them are pretty technical. And, you know, and as you probably know, you know, when you have Lyme brain and you can't read, you can't process information, your short-term memory.